40th anniversary of the Son of Sam murders all across New York City. Here to talk about it is one of the leaders as far as a documentary filmmaker and himself. He's done so many great things. We'll talk about that as well. Tom Jennings joins us for a couple of minutes. Tom, how are you?
I'm well, Jay. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Doing great. Boy, I was just a little tot way back, but I got to tell you, I do remember having grown up in Queens myself in Bayside, Tom. And you know, the thing that always stands out to me was, I think it was called Elvis Nightclub, something of that nature. But it wasn't far from where I lived. And, you know, I always remember when no one was home in my house, you know, it was just me and the dog, and I'd be looking out the windows. When all this stuff was going on, it was terrorizing, pretty much.
It was. You know, we went through a lot of footage to try and bring back to life that time period, because, you know, our format uses no narration and no interviews. We just use the media from the time to tell the story. So you can imagine, even though this was long ago, going through a couple of hundred hours of media reports, both radio and television, you know, myself and with my staff that put this together, we, you know, you start to get nightmares all over again.
No question about it. I'm talking about the Smithsonian Channel, as Tom has put together some great stuff, really the harrowing story of literally a city on edge in the Lost Tapes, Son of Sam. And, you know, you're talking about, what, July of 1976, his name, of course, David Berkowitz. And, what, six killed, Tom, seven injured, pretty much, right?
Six killed, seven injured, that's correct, over more than a year, actually.
And it was one of those deals where, you know, it was frightening. You could be sitting in your car, you'd hear the reports. I remember an individual killed as a passenger sitting in a car, right?
He liked to stalk Lover's Lane,
right?
Back in the day. And, you know, people, in putting this together, we talked to some New York City detectives. There was a very large task force that was put together. And, you know, remember, this is in a day and age where there was no social media. There weren't cameras everywhere. And despite that, they told me, you know, because we were looking for background and images and things like that, they said the problem was that he would go to places where, you wouldn't even necessarily have a camera today. There wouldn't necessarily be anyone around with a cell phone. He would find young couples parked in cars, you know, as young couples like to do,
right?
You know, on darkened streets at late at night. And it became, and what he would do is he was very opportunistic in that he would look for these people, but he told the detectives that once he was arrested many times, he would pass somebody by, but he couldn't find a parking space. So if he couldn't park his car, those people would live. And if he would drive around for a couple of blocks, he'd find a parking space. Park his car, he'd approach the couple's vehicle from behind so they never knew what was coming, and then he would use this .44 caliber handgun.
Which, by the way, he was labeled as just that, right? The .44 caliber killer.
Correct. You know, the first three or four shootings, this was another thing that even still exists today. He was striking in various places around the boroughs, the Bronx, Queens, and, you know, these are police districts that wouldn't necessarily be comparing crimes from one district to another, because at the time, especially, the New York area was crime-ridden. And so it took until the fourth one where they figured out, wait a minute, this .44 caliber arbitrary shooting is very similar to one that happened over in the Bronx. And they started comparing notes, they compared the bullets, and then they realized, four shootings in a row over 4 or 5 months, we have a serial killer on our hand. And they put together this Omega Task Force, which actually wound up involving 300 detectives.
And, you know, the thing I remember way back and then reading about it, of course, was the relief of everyone involved here, enforcement, the public, because, I mean, let's face it, you're talking about a guy who would shoot and kill at random. So one never knew. You know, you'd always be looking over your shoulder pretty much. But when this guy was taken into custody, and by the way, I think he was a postal worker, right? A 24-year-old guy
correct.
At the time?
He was a postal worker, yeah.
Yeah. So when this guy was kind of taken into custody, I mean, you could just hear, you could feel it, you know, kind of, wow, he's taken it. You know, it was a relief, a major relief here.
It was. You know, one of the things that we found that I think you would appreciate and your listeners would is that two things. Speaking of relief, we found a lot of what are called in the media man-on-the-street interviews, both during the killing spree, once he was identified as a serial killer, and then after. And for us, in putting this together, that was one of the most fun parts, is to see these man-on-the-street interviews, both people being very afraid, and then the relief that they felt later on, because in the voices and the being able to see those people, you get to feel the lifeblood of the city and the region at the time, because that's who was affected. People were afraid, especially young women with long brown hair. That was, it seemed to be, his favorite target.
Right.
And then to hear the relief later on, people were saying, one woman said, oh, my daughter, you know, her boyfriend is in a band, and they were at a disco, and the police came in to just tell everyone in the disco at 1 in the morning, we caught the Son of Sam. Can you imagine this today, like walking into a bar and saying, oh, by the way, everyone, we can relax now. And then the daughter calls the mother in the middle of the night, her mother. They're both interviewed in the show. That's what I'm referring to. And the fact that you would bother to call your mom at 2 a.m. to say, guess what, the Son of Sam is caught, even though you have no direct relation to him,
right,
is remarkable to me.
And, you know, when you think about it, and you mentioned no social media, you know, it's not like Twitter and everything else was up right. up and running here. You know, you get alerts of this type of crime in a second now. But in essence, you didn't have that. So, you know, when word got around, and by the way, wasn't it a parking ticket? Was that
correct.
Kind of the original trace back as far as this guy getting a ticket, and then police put two and two together here?
Well, you know, as I said, he liked to, he was an opportunistic killer. And if he found a place to park his car, that's how he would go about his killings. And he found a place but didn't realize there was a fire hydrant there. And one of my favorite characters, I'm sure New Yorkers will appreciate, one of the best characters the last several decades in New York is Jimmy Breslin.
And by the way, Breslin was instrumental, right, Tom, in this?
Because
I remember like a fingerprint or something on a letter that was sent to Jimmy, who, by the way, was a great columnist, for those who remember back in the day with the Daily News, right?
Yes, he was terrific. Another thing we enjoyed a lot is because Breslin was kind of in his prime, you know, during this time period. You know, he was the brash New Yorker, he was the Daily News columnist, and Son of Sam, you know, was so into Breslin that he was corresponding with him, corresponding in that he would send Breslin letters. And Breslin winds up on a lot of the local television talk shows in New York, in the New York area at the time. And you get to see him, you know, this he's a big guy, and he's got, you know, he's Mr. New York, and he's talking about how does the worst, one of the worst crimes, killing sprees in the history of mankind, he calls it, how does it get solved? It's not by police flying up, you know, with their guns drawn and taking somebody down in the moment. It's somebody going in at an office through parking tickets, looking for a license plate that matches a particular car. You know, he really was encapsulated the time, and he was involved in that. He would write columns and articles about the killings, and then Berkowitz would write letters to him, which then became part of the story. It was crazy.
It really was. And, you know, a lot of people always ask the question, you know, how did they derive the name, you know, Son of Sam? And I always remember this in the fact that there was a black Labrador retriever involved. Now, it's significant because apparently Berkowitz had a neighbor who had this dog, and it was Berkowitz, as insane as he was, he believed that, you know, it pled with him to kill. And he saw this neighbor as this very powerful, I guess call it like a demon-like, and later, and of course later called himself Son of Sam.
Correct. Well, it's a bit of a misnomer in the whole story, kind of an odd one that I didn't know until we researched more deeply. Berkowitz said that there was an entity named Sam speaking to him through his neighbor's dog that was telling him to kill. But the funny part, kind of sad, I mean, because so many people were hurt, but just the Berkowitz story alone, the neighbor's dog, everyone thinks the neighbor's dog was named Sam. No, the entity was named Sam. The neighbor's dog was named Harvey.
Right. It's unbelievable.
Go figure.
Yeah, you know. No question. We're talking with Tom Jennings. Does a great job with the Smithsonian Channel. The 40th anniversary, the murder spree, really terrorized New York City and parts surrounding. Hard to believe, July 76. Tom, before we let you go, I mean, and you've done so much of this. You know, you've handled so many great series. When you look at serial killers back in the day, you know, I think about Jeffrey Dahmer and John Wayne Gacy, and of course Berkowitz as Son of Sam. I mean, how would you rank this whole episode here as far as what really, you know, was a popular topic to discuss way back in time, serial killers, although they've kind of gone by the wayside at this point in time. But how would you rank the whole Berkowitz episode, pretty much?
Well, if I had to rank him, he would be, you know, one or two. There's only a couple of others in the modern history of the United States that equate to him. One is Ted Bundy.
Right.
But he terrorized basically the entire nation. But the one that's closest to Berkowitz is one from the San Francisco Bay Area, which was the Zodiac.
Right.
Which people still remember. And Zodiac did very similar things. He wrote to newspapers. He targeted people in lovers' lanes. But Berkowitz, I remember, you know, I was a young guy at the time, but I remember every night it was the lead story in the news for a year and a half, and you couldn't escape it, and it was a city in fear.
No question about it. Great stuff, really is. Tom Jennings, multi-award-winning documentary filmmaker, journalist. He's written and produced and directed, by the way, more than 400 hours of programming for such networks, CBS, Discovery Channel, National Geographic, Investigation Discovery, MSNBC, PBS. You can go on and on here. Great stuff, Tom. Really good stuff. We look forward to the next one.
Thank you very much. It's on Sunday night, Smithsonian Channel, 9 o'clock.
There you go. 9 o'clock, Smithsonian Channel. Check your local listings, and we'll keep an eye on that. Thank you, sir.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
You got it.